And thanks for joining us. I'm Frank Sesno, host of Planet Forward. I'm director of the School of Media and Public Affairs at the George Washington University, and it's my pleasure to be sitting in for Diane Rehm today. She's in Cape Cod visiting public radio station WCAI, WGBH, and accepting a We Can Award. She will be back tomorrow. It's June, in case you hadn't noticed, and many of us are heading outside to enjoy summer activities. That means the beach, the pool, the volleyball, whatever it takes. But with skin cancer on the rise, we invited a group of experts to discuss the best protection from overexposure to ultraviolet rays. Joining us in the studio, Dr. Liz Tanzi of Johns Hopkins Hospital Center and Dr. Maral Skelsey of Georgetown University. Joining us by phone, Dr. Martin Weinstein of Brown University. Greetings to you all.
Good morning.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're not here to depress people and to say don't enjoy the summer. We're not here to say don't enjoy the sun. But we are here to, I think, have a very interesting conversation that will help inform us about the do's, the don'ts, the dangers, and the opportunities of this thing we call sunshine and this affliction we call cancer. So let me start, Dr. Weinstein, with you. What are the most common forms of skin cancer?
Well, the three common forms of skin cancer, the most common is basal cell carcinoma, and that's the most common cancer, period, in the whole country. That's the most common. The second is squamous cell carcinoma, and the third is melanoma. And those are the three most common types. You should realize that skin cancer overall is more common than all other cancers combined in the U.S. There are over 2 million people a year who are afflicted with skin cancer.
Dr. Tanzi, what is your relationship and what's your area of expertise in this?
Well, I'm a board-certified dermatologist. My area of expertise is laser dermatology. However, all new patients and existing patients, I really enforce the fact that I want them to get a full skin exam at least once a year to check out all of their potential skin lesions, because certainly...
Age-related? Anybody? Everybody?
No,
kids?
Everybody. You know, when it comes to certainly older patients, I'll encourage them to have more frequent skin checks, particularly if they've had a previous skin cancer or they have a strong family history or if they've had quite a bit of sun exposure. We have a lot of previous lifeguards and people playing a lot of golf and tennis. They're getting a lot of sun exposure, and they really need to have their skin examined.
All right, Dr. Skelsey, tell us here. The typical advice is cover up, put on sunscreen. What's that missing?
Well, you need to know how to put it on, when to put it on. It's not just putting it on as you're walking out the door. You really need to put your sunscreen on 20 to 30 minutes before you go outdoors. You need to use a sunscreen that's appropriate for your body area. For the scalp, use a gel. For around the eyes, use a stick sunscreen. You need to reapply it after 2 hours and after perspiring or sweating.
All right, so let's rewind here a little bit and take this one at a time. Why 30 minutes ahead of time? Dr. Weinstein, you want to jump in on this?
Well, when you put it on the sunscreen, often it just basically sits on the surface. And so if you happen to... say, wipe the surface with something like a towel or something, it'll wipe right off. And so that's something that people need to be aware of. Once it goes on the surface, once it's on the surface, it protects the skin. So the UV can't get through, but it's easy to be wiped off, and so the reapplication is important.
So, Dr. Skelsey, though, I'm a bad boy because I take this goop, which I hate, and put it on just before I walk outside. So am I missing something here?
Better to just put it on right before you go out the door than not put it on.
But what's this 30-minute business?
You know, it depends on the type of sunscreen, but a lot of sunscreens, as Dr. Weinstock said, they actually can be wiped off really easily. So it has to dry and stay on your skin, and actually things that are chemical rather than physical blocks will work better after they've been on the skin for a short time.
Because they have to be absorbed at some level. Now, back to what you said a moment ago about different kinds of sunscreen for different parts of my body. Okay, bad boy number two. Something for my scalp, a different stick for under my eyes. What is this all about?
Well, it's, you know, it's just good to be aware that there are different kinds of sunscreen that are more useful and can be more helpful to, in different parts of your body. So, as I said, on the hair-bearing areas, on the scalp, something that's a gel will work better.
So even if I have a full head of hair?
No, you have a great head of hair, so you don't need anything on your
Dr. Weinstock, you want to take up for the men here with what you're supposed to do for your scalp?
So the first thing I'd like to say is a general point, and that is we'll be getting into lots of details in our conversation this morning. But the most important thing is that you take some protection. That's some, S-O-M-E, protection from the sun. So we can get into details about what's best and what's a little better than something else, but putting something on is much better. Even if you're a bad boy, as you say, you just put it on right before. Maybe you don't, you know, you put something on, whatever. If you have something on, it's better than not having anything on. And that's the most important point. Because unprotected exposure to that ultraviolet radiation is the main problem in terms of genesis of skin cancers. With all these skin cancers happening, it's really that unprotected exposure that puts people at high risk of getting those over the long term.
Well, also, I think that it's important to note, bottom line, when it comes to sunscreen, there's no excuse for not using sunscreen at this point because there's so many great formulations. You have formulations that are creamy, so for people with dry skin, the common complaint in the past was, well, sunscreen makes my skin break out. It's too greasy. It's too sticky. There are so many different formulations now, ranging from powder sunscreen for people who are acne-prone to moisturizing sunscreens, gel sunscreens that really stay on the skin if you're athletic and they're relatively sweat-proof, even though we do talk about reapplying after sweating. You don't want that sunscreen running in your eyes. It can be very stingy if you're using it on your face. But really the bottom line here is there is a sunscreen for everyone, and there really are no excuses not to find one that works for you.
We're going to be inviting your calls and questions for our panel here talking about sunscreens, skin cancer, prevention, treatment as we go through the hour. Our number here is 1-800-433-8850. That's 1-800-433-8850. Or you can email us at drshow@wamu.org. Let me ask you all about these sunscreens, because there are some people who frankly don't trust them. They think they're all the same, that the number doesn't amount to much, that a sunscreen is a sunscreen, that it's marketing more than effectiveness. Shed some light on this for us, if you would, Dr. Scalzi. How good are these products, and how can a consumer determine one from the other?
Well, there is no perfect sunscreen. It's not like putting on a hat where there's a physical block, but there are very, very good sunscreens out there. And what I tell my patients to look for are sunscreens that have an SPF, which is, SPF is what is blocking the ultraviolet light B radiation, an SPF of at least 30.
That's the number that you see.
That's the number. And you look for that number. And then you also look for something else. And look for something that says protection against UVA. So ultraviolet light A is not blocked and not measured by SPF. So the two things that I like people to look for are the SPF, look at that number, and then look to see whether or not they're saying that they're protecting against ultraviolet A. The FDA right now doesn't have a designation in terms of labeling for UVA blocks, so we're waiting for that, and that we might get that in about October.
Can someone explain what those numbers mean and whether they are derived in a scientific fashion or whether that's an extension of the marketing, like the tube of toothpaste that says prevents cavities 4 out of 5 doctors recommend, and you really don't know what that means?
It's a relatively scientific in terms of if you go out in the sun and get a sunburn, it takes an S, if you have an SPF of, say, a 15, you're going to not get sunburn unless you're there 15 times as long as you would have been without sun protection. But an SPF 30 is not twice as good. You're only blocking about 97% of the rays with an SPF, say, of, of 30.
So this is some kind of formulation here?
Yes, actually. I think, again, it can be very confusing when someone goes into the sunscreen aisle and they're looking at all these different numbers. What the American Academy of Dermatology suggests is that people use at least an SPF 30 because oftentimes the proper amount of sunscreen is not being used. When sunscreens are originally tested, they're tested with a significant amount of sunscreen. People don't realize that a full shot glass worth of sunscreen is what's supposed to cover their entire body. Often people are using sunscreen and they may use the same bottle all throughout the summer. That is far less sunscreen than what's typically recommended.
So, Dr. Weinstock, I need to use more of this stuff than I probably would be inclined to do. I need to kind of goop it on a little bit.
Well, the thicker you put it on, the better protection you have. And the numbers do, as was just said, the numbers depend on the thickness, and it is a specific formulation that formula that's regulated by the Food and Drug Administration. So what it means is specifically for those who perhaps are a little more mathematically inclined, an SPF 15 means that put in on the recommended thickness, and you will only have 1/15 of the rays penetrating that layer of sunscreen.
And I'm told that you actually should be putting this stuff on not just when you're going to the beach, but every day.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
because you get ultraviolet all the time. You get it if you're just outdoors, taking a few blocks,
so
walking.
Take your vitamins and take your sunscreen. A quick break. We're talking about summer sun, summer fun, and how to take care of yourself. Be right back on The Diane Rehm Show. Welcome back to the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno, sitting in for Diane today, and we are talking this hour about something that just about everybody should be thinking about this time of the year, and really all the year, and that is the sun and how much of it is good for us, how much of it is bad for us, and what we do to protect ourselves from it. Our guest, Dr. Martin Weinstock. He's the chairman of the Skin Cancer Advisory Group for the American Cancer Society, among other things. Dr. Maral Skelsey, she is head of the surgery and clinical assistant professor at Georgetown University. And Dr. Elizabeth Tanzi from Johns Hopkins Hospital Center, dermatology there as well, assistant professor of dermatology. Have an email, folks, for you here from a listener. And we have actually got a lot of emails and people in the phone queue already. Denise writes, lack of vitamin D is killing us, all capital letters, she says, and you just can't get full absorption through pills. I have a medical condition that lays me flat in cold winters. If I'm not getting sun 3 times a week, I'm sick all the time. I'll take quality. Thank you. What about vitamin D and these sunscreens and sunblocks and clothes and everything that people are talking about to prevent cancer and the trade-off of cancer for vitamin D?
Well, I can take that one.
Go ahead.
There are certain people with certain medical conditions where they cannot absorb vitamin D orally, and for that they need to consult a physician and figure out the best way to get what they need. But for the general public, vitamin D is very well absorbed orally, and so that's certainly a perfect option. You can get some vitamin D from the sun, but that's very irregular, so it's not a dependable way to get vitamin D. It's much more reliable to go to your local pharmacy, whether it's CVS or Rite Aid or whatever you have in your area, and just get a vitamin D pill to get what you need.
Dr. Scalzi, you were talking about a recent study on this very topic.
We just completed a study looking at vitamin D and the risk of skin cancer, noticing that there's a relationship, as there is with other kinds of cancers, with low D and increased skin cancer. The important point, though, is that there's no reason to risk getting skin cancer or suffering from photoaging by getting your vitamin D through the sun. The sun is a carcinogen, and it's neither a safe nor an effective way of restoring your levels of vitamin D. The best way, as Dr. Weinstock said, is through a healthy diet and through vitamin supplements.
Dr. Tanzi.
You know, as dermatologists, we realize, and as physicians, we realize the importance of vitamin D. Low levels of vitamin D have been associated not only with skin cancer, but with colon cancer, breast cancer, potentially prostate cancer, all of these different things.
And a lot of people were told to get their vitamin D by having some time in the sunshine.
Exactly. However, that's a major misconception. Again, supplementation, and I really make the recommendation of, for most people, about 1,000 international units a day of easily attainable and inexpensive supplements is usually enough to restore vitamin D levels. Again, to underscore what Dr. Scalzi said, there's really no reason to increase risky behavior, additional sun exposure, increasing your risk of skin cancer when there are supplements that are easy to obtain. When I talk to patients, I try to make them understand this. It would be like saying, If you have anemia and you have low levels of iron and your doctor tells you, well, you can get your iron through eating red meat every day, you would look at that doctor and say, I think that's misguided information.
But you wouldn't necessarily think the doctor was completely on track if the doctor said, you don't need any red meat at all. I mean, for some people, that's fine. They're vegetarians and all that kind of thing. But most people would say, well, you know, so it's what confuses people is where is that right balance? Because if I listen to you, I would never go out into the sun.
No, you can't actually get enough vitamin D actually from going out in the sun. So you're actually not doing anything beneficial for your vitamin D, because as we age, our ability to synthesize vitamin D in the skin after a reaction with sunlight diminishes.
A lot of callers. I want to get to the phones, but first one from someone who emailed us. For people who work outdoors and perspire a lot, what's recommended? Does the screen wash off if you perspire a lot? Is heavy clothing the only answer?
And this also goes back to recommendations with sunscreen. If you listen to dermatologists, sunscreen is only one part of a good sun protective plan. Sun protective clothing is important. You want to avoid sunlight if you can during the time of the day when the light is the strongest, between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. in the afternoon. Hat, sunglasses to protect your eyes. All of these things are part of a good sun protective program.
Let's go to where the sun definitely shines bright, Miami, Florida, and Kristen's on the phone. Hi, Kristen. Go ahead with your question, please.
Yeah, hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I live in South Florida, and I'm very fair-skinned, and I have a toddler he's 3 now, and he's very fair-skinned. I've read reports about some of the chemicals in sunscreen being carcinogenic. I'm not sure sometimes what the right choice should be for my family. I've heard that high percentages of titanium dioxide or zinc oxide are favorable versus like the I forget what all the chemicals are, oxybenzylene or things like this. If you could address that, I'd appreciate it.
You are clearly an informed consumer, if still a little mystified by all these different things out there. Throughout your question, Dr. Tanzi was nodding her head yes as you were ticking off the list there.
Kristen, I was nodding my head yes because not only as a dermatologist but also as a mom of 2 young kids, I worry about what goes into them and what goes on them as well. What has been shown to be really quite safe? There's no evidence that chemical sunscreens are not safe. However, I still, when I'm dealing with children, would recommend physical sunscreens, which is your zinc and your titanium, because they have a lower risk of irritation on the skin. They are excellent blocking agents, and children just do really very well with them, as well as sun protective clothing. Kids, they're really great options out there now for swim shirts and swim trunks. You can keep them pretty well covered and reduce
the
area.
Do that with your kids?
That's exactly what I do with my kids. Because to get sunscreen on them and reapply it multiple times is difficult. It really is.
That's sort of the grease pole contest.
It's helpful to start young, and so they're used to wearing the sun protective clothing, and it's just something that they grow up with.
Dr. Weinstock, we're getting a lot of emails from listeners about the Environmental Working Group study on harmful components in sunscreens. What can you tell us about that?
Well, so sunscreens have been used for a long time. None of the ingredients currently in commercially available sunscreens in this country have been shown to be harmful. So that's the bottom line. There's all sorts of speculation. Well, could this be a problem? Could that be a problem? But when you look to see what's the evidence that something is really a problem, it's just not there. So that's the bottom line. I saw in this some of the publicity around this working group, some people were saying, well, sunscreens could be increasing skin cancer. That's clearly not the case. We know from randomized controlled trials that sunscreens decrease the risk of skin cancer. Sunscreens reduce your chances of getting cancer. So that's known. That's a scientific fact. These other potential hazards of these ingredients, I mean, you know, you can't prove a negative. I mean, we have no evidence that there are such, no convincing scientific evidence that there's any such hazard whatsoever. However, you know, something may come up tomorrow, I don't know, but as of this moment, no evidence of a hazard. And so I think it's safe to use. There's certainly millions of people who use it, apparently without adverse effects.
Dr. Skelsey, what are you telling your patients when this question comes up?
Well, the FDA has approved all of the ingredients that are in the sunscreens, and I do think that all of them are relatively safe. We have no evidence, as Dr. Weinstock says, that there's any real risk with using sunscreen, and I would underline the fact that these data are still emerging. We're still learning about what what sunscreens can potentially have an effect on this body. But right now, they're safe, and I would continue to use the sunscreens that are out in the market.
Dr. Tanzi, you were talking about your kids. We have a caller who I think has some questions about her kids. Susan from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Susan.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question regarding sunblock and my children. I have three young children. I'm using sunblock daily with them. I give it time to absorb before they go out into the sun. It's waterproof, and yet they are still tanning. One child in particular gets quite a dark tan, and I'm not understanding why. I'm using factor 50, we've only had summer in Ann Arbor now for about 2 weeks, and already all three of them are showing tan lines.
Dr. Tanzi.
Well, first of all, kudos to you, because you're doing a really great job, it sounds like, protecting your children before they go out. When it comes to sunscreens, as we alluded to before, sunscreens will block both, if you get a good broad-spectrum sunscreen, it'll block both UVA and UVB. However, sunscreens are better at blocking UVB than they are UVA. So some UVA will get through a sunscreen. Because of that, there is a certain amount of tanning that can happen. You can minimize that by, again, reapplying the sunscreen, trying to keep the kids out of the sun during the highest point, during the most intense sun rays between 10 a.m. and 2. But it may happen. It happens with my own children as well, and that is because a certain amount of UVA will penetrate some of the sunscreen.
And it's very important with children, isn't it? Because what those children are experiencing in those early years is a major indicator, precursor of what they're going to experience in their later years?
Potentially. There's a significant amount of sun exposure that children are getting before the age of 18. And you want to minimize the risk of sunburn, obviously, because even having a single sunburn, blistering sunburn in one's lifetime can really increase their risk of melanoma, the most deadly form of skin cancer. So it's important. Really, parents have the ability to protect their children from skin cancer down the road.
You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-433-8850 or send us an email to drshow@wamu.org. Folks, one of the wonderful things about this program is it has a great, dedicated, and very diverse audience. And I'd like you to clarify for us whether this is an across-the-board recommendation to people. If you have little kids, no matter what color they are or hue they are or what color eyes or hair they've got, that they should be treated this way. Or, as is popularly stated, the darker your complexion, the less likely you are to become a victim, a sufferer of skin cancer as a result of the sun. Dr. Weinstock, you want to start that off, please?
Sure, I'll start. So it's unequivocally true that people whose natural untanned skin color is brown have lower risk of all the major forms of skin cancer than people whose natural untanned skin color is white. So that's unequivocally true. The problem we get into is when people expose themselves to ultraviolet to change their natural color. If people were happy with the color they were born with, that'd be great. But we have a lot of people who were born with light white skin who say, I want brown skin. And they weren't born that way. And so they expose themselves to these carcinogenic ultraviolet radiation, and they suffer consequences potentially.
But if I can just stay on this one aspect for a moment, though, because I want to talk about what we do to change our hue in a few minutes. So, do you not tell your patients with darker skin that they should, for example, apply sunblock to their kids, that they don't need to do that? Is that something that parents might not need to worry about so much?
You know, it's true that Caucasians have a higher risk of getting skin cancer. However, darkly pigmented people also have a risk of getting melanoma, and the types of melanoma can be very aggressive.
So
I tell everybody. Because it's still, their sunscreen is the only way also to stop photo aging.
Do you, Dr. Tanzi, do you tell everybody as well?
I like to make the recommendation of sunblock in patients with skin of color as well. There's one aspect of the skin cancer aspect, but there are also other changes that happen to the skin related to the sun that in patients with skin of color, it's going to increase their risk of pigmentation. All of these different changes in their skin, they're not going to like down the line. And they could protect themselves from that to a certain extent by applying sunscreen. So there are other reasons to protect yourself from the sun. Obviously, skin cancer is the most important reason, but there are other reasons.
To the phones, Marianne from St. Louis. Hi, Marianne.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm a breast cancer survivor. And I came upon an article in the newspaper. I don't know if this is a controversial study, but there was a link between the ingredients in almost all sunscreens, the oxybenzone ingredient, that gets absorbed into your skin and may cause, as a breast cancer survivor, make your breast cancer reoccur or cause breast cancer. It's recommended for women who are breast cancer survivors not to use this.
Dr. Scalzi,
I did talk about it with my team of doctors, and it was pretty much left up to me what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Did you and your doctors were telling you this?
No, it was an article in the newspaper that I had seen, and I don't know how far this has been researched, but it was quite scary to me because last year, I found this out 2 years ago, but then last year I was diagnosed with basal skin cell cancer on my face. So I'm really concerned about my skin, and I am olive skin. and was surprised that I had basal cell skin cancer.
Okay. Dr. Skelsey?
So the controversy I'm interested in is the link between breast cancer and the oxybenzone ingredient.
Right, right. Thanks so much.
Marianne, I'm sorry about your breast cancer and the newly diagnosed basal cell, and I'm glad you're thinking about using a sunscreen, because once you do have one skin cancer, you have a 50% chance of getting another skin cancer. The issue of oxybenzone is not clear. There's no definitive data yet showing that there's any risk for patients with breast cancer that I'm aware of. But it's important for you to continue to wear a sunscreen. And for you, I would look into wearing those that are physical blocks like titanium dioxide and the zinc oxide.
And to see these ingredients, you look in the ingredients,
yes.
Obviously. I mean,
mm-hmm.
It's not going to be gigantic letters or anything. You've got to read the fine print.
Mm-hmm. But clearly on the label of every sunscreen, when you turn the sunscreen around, there's a list of active ingredients, and that should very clearly state either zinc or titanium, and those should be the only two active ingredients. In this case, if you're looking for a non-chemical sunscreen, it should only be zinc or titanium.
We're talking about skin cancer, prevention, and treatment in a few minutes. And one thing that we're doing that may actually be making the threat much, much worse. You're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Stesno. We'll take a short break.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And by the Kiplinger Foundation, supporting public understanding of business and the economy. This is NPR.
Economist and sociologist Julia Chor argues for a more sustainable economy and satisfying life. She explains how to work and spend less, create and connect more. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back to the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Stesno, sitting in for Diane today. We're talking about the dangers of sun and skin cancer and what people can do about it. Our guest today, Dr. Martin Weinstock. He's professor of dermatology and community health at Brown University and the chief of dermatology at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Providence, Rhode Island, among other things. He joins us by phone. Dr. Maral Skelsey, she's director of the Mohs Surgery Unit and clinical assistant professor of dermatology at Georgetown University. And Dr. Elizabeth Tanzi, co-director of the Washington Institute of Dermatologic Laser Surgery. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Oh, good. Assistant professor of dermatology at Johns Hopkins Hospital Center. It is a mouthful, but these titles are very important and suggest the important work that you all are doing. Well, we have a huge number of emails and telephone calls. So I want to just go right to some of the emails and phone calls, tick through them, and try to get some quick responses to answer some of these questions as quickly as we can. Here's one, an email. Could your guest comment on the amount of UVA, UVB rays that pass through car windows and sunroofs? Anybody got a thought on that? What comes through glass? Do we have to worry?
UVA goes through glass and UVB does not. So you need to think about that when you're in a car for a long time and wearing sun protection that blocks against ultraviolet A.
Here's one from Catherine in Dallas. I've heard that sunscreen expires after a certain amount of time. Can you clarify if this is the case and talk about how long one can keep sunscreen and still get the original efficacy? Presumably that's in the tube. Dr. Weinstock, you know anything about that?
Well, the best is if you have an expiration date on the tube, but in general, they last up to 3 years. They may need shaking if it's a liquid and it precipitates out.
Another one from Jessica. How are hand and face lotions that say added sunscreen SPF 8 or 10 or 15? Is this a useful replacement, Dr. Tenzi, for sunblock?
In general, the sun protective factor, or the SPF that's written on the moisturizer, is the sun protective factor that you're going to get. However, most people don't use those products in the same way they would use a sunscreen. Maybe they put it on once in the morning, they're not applying it thickly, and they're not reapplying it. So really, it's important to pay attention, if you're using it for a sunscreen, to use it like a sunscreen with reapplication and a thick application to begin with.
Okay, here's a tough one. I'm a 40-year-old fair-skinned, blue-eyed redhead. I understand most of your skin damage happens before the age of 20. I've had my fair share of sunburns and sun exposure. For the last 10 years, I've been religious about sunscreen and coverage. I know there isn't a way to reverse the damage, but am I delaying or preventing my chances of skin cancer? That's from Bridget.
Bridget, absolutely. If you continue to wear sunscreen and protect yourself from the sun, you have a great chance of reducing some of that damage and reducing your risk of skin cancer.
Let's go to the phones and Katie here. Katie from Belleville, Illinois. Go ahead, Katie. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Here's my question. I am the mom of some little kids, and I'm very protective of them. And I actually have two questions. One is, I would like a little advice on what to say to the grandparents who say, hey, we were out in the sun, and, you know, we're okay. And then I'm handing them 3 bottles of sunscreen when they take my kids, and I fear they're not really using them. And my other question is, I would like to hear what the doctors have to say about getting a base tan. You know, you hear people say, I'm going to get just a base tan so I don't get burned. I'd like to hear what they have to say about that.
Dr. Weinstock, you want to start us? Yes. Thanks, Katie.
Sure.
Let's start with Dr. Weinstock. I think I heard Katie's
right.
Kids in the background there. So,
there's quite a bit of evidence now that links indoor tanning to melanoma risk, as well as squamous cell carcinoma risk. So this idea of a base is not a good idea, because the problem is, by getting a base, what you're doing is you're exposing yourself to this carcinogenic radiation to get the base, and then once you get the base, you expose yourself to a lot more carcinogenic radiation because you figure, oh, well, I have my base, so I can now expose myself. So it can sort of multiply the amount of exposure you get to what's, in fact, the main cause of these various types of skin cancer.
And Dr. Tenzi, what should Katie tell the grandparents?
Well, she can tell the grandparents that about 1 in 5 Americans will be diagnosed with skin cancer in their lifetime. It's a huge issue. And unequivocally, sunscreen has been shown to reduce that risk. And a tremendous amount of sun exposure happens in childhood. So really, this is an important decision that you're making about the health of your children moving forward. It's important that they respect that decision and use sunscreen.
Dr. Scalzi, Dr. Weinstock a moment ago mentioned tanning for base tans. Well, an email from Lisa who writes, I simply do not understand why tanning salons remain in business. We do enough damage to our skin without them. I think dermatologists are seeing younger and younger patients with skin cancers daily because of damage from these tanning beds. True? False?
Absolutely true. A new study just came out showing that you're significantly more likely to develop a melanoma after using an indoor tanning, and that it's the more you use, the greater chance you have of getting melanoma. So it was a dose-response relationship. In other words, the more you do, the more chance you get of getting skin cancer.
There was a story that aired on National Public Radio on All Things Considered just the other day about people who go to these tanning salons actually becoming addicted, in a sense, to these sorts of things. Dr. Tansey, is that true? Are you seeing that? Do you know what this is also referring to, a study that was recently done?
Well, when I think of addiction, I think of something that's detrimental to one's health, and you're not able to realize that and continue with the activity anyway. And certainly going to a tanning salon is without a doubt associated with skin cancer, and what we know now, it's associated with melanoma, the deadly type of skin cancer. Young people in this country die from melanoma all the time. You know, it's one of the most common causes of cancer deaths among young women. And to downplay that risk by go to a tanning salon is quite frankly, I think the person who emailed hit it right on the head. It's hard to believe.
Well, where's the FDA in tanning salon right now? Silence, smiles.
Well, I think it certainly is under review. And then there was also a recommendation that there is a tan tax on tanning to help to discourage younger people from having going to tanning salons because they have less disposable income to spend. And I think that's a good first step. But as dermatologists, we like to see them outlawed altogether.
Here's an email from...
And I would like to make a comment on that.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
The FDA is currently considering how it's going to change the regulations on tanning salons, which in the past have been very, very loose. But in light of the recent evidence on health risks, they're actively considering what sort of changes to make. The World Health Organization has already come out with a recommendation that children not be allowed into recreational tanning facilities, so that they just want kids under the age of 18 just not to be allowed to do this recreational indoor tanning.
So do you just flat out tell your patients not to do this?
Yeah. I mean, it's easy not to tell the patients not to do it. Some are physically addicted, however. There are some. Now,
really?
Not all of them.
Physically addicted?
Yes. There was some interesting studies done which showed that it's not as strong as, say, cigarettes. So cigarettes is a very strong addiction. This is a weak physical addiction. And there was a study done where they gave a medication that's used to wean people off hard drugs, to keep people from going back to hard drugs. It's called naltrexone. And they gave that to some frequent tanners, and some of them had the same reactions that these addicts do to that medication because they have some physical addiction.
But
it doesn't happen to infrequent tanners. It's only people who are very frequent tanners, and it's only some of them. And it's not as strong as with these hard drugs, but it's a real phenomenon.
Let's go back to the phones. Tamara calls us and joins us from Syracuse, New York. Hi, Tamara. Thanks for being patient and waiting.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was recently diagnosed with basal cell carcinoma, and I have been trying to be very good about putting on the sunblock. Unfortunately, I seem to be allergic to all of it, no matter what brand I've tried or whether the label says it's chemical-free. For several days after, I have a red face with itching, and I was wondering if your panel could help me find a sunblock.
Anybody got suggestions for Tamara?
The Vanna cream is one brand that's hypoallergenic that you might try, and I would really look into purchasing sun protective clothing. You can get a lot more protection, in fact, with hats.
Talk about that, because it's not just regular clothing. Not just anything is protective.
No, it's not. Regular clothing isn't. In fact, you know, you get very little protection from a thin white T-shirt. Because if you look through, say, a white T-shirt, you can shine a light right through it. So that means you're not getting enough sun protection. There are several brands that are available. You can get them in stores like Lands' End and Target. You can actually get them online. And these are actually, they're tested, and they have a uniform sun protection throughout.
Are they labeled somehow?
They're labeled,
What are they called? What's it, sun protective clothing?
They're called sun protective clothing. Some of the companies are Coolabar and sunprotections.com. You can look online, and there are several brands now that are available.
We should say no product placement here. This is just, that's all right. These are just examples to give to people. Here's a here's an email from Dick who asks, what role do sunglasses play here? I don't look at the sun. Are we talking about indirect rays, reflected? I don't understand the role of sunglasses in protecting against skin cancer. Dr. Tanzi.
Sunglasses here are important for multiple reasons. Not only do they protect the skin around your eyes, which is relatively fragile skin, and it frequently can get skin cancers, as Dr. Skelsey knows. She removes these probably on a weekly basis. But also, it's equally important to protect your eyes. Sun exposure and ultraviolet exposure throughout the years will increase your risk of cataracts as well as other potential problems in your eyes. So that is another reason to be wearing sunglasses every single day.
Here's one from Lenny. Suppose I put sunscreen on at 8 a.m. and go outside for a total of 15 minutes between 8 and 10. At 10, am I supposed to put on more sunscreen, or do I need to reapply after being outside for 15 minutes? Somebody want to help Lenny out here?
You need to put it on again. It's... Again, at 10 o'clock. So
it's every couple
of
hours.
Every 2 hours, because your skin actually will the sunscreen degrades on your skin, so it's not as effective after 2 hours.
Several callers asking what the best way is, if you've been out in the sun and you get a sunburn, what the best way to treat a sunburn is to protect your skin. Dr. Weinstock?
Well, that's sort of closing the barn door after the horse is out. The best thing to do is prevention. If your skin has gotten red from the sun, you have failed.
Here's an email from John, who asks, and I wouldn't be surprised if this represents a question that a lot of people would have, especially listening to this conversation and thinking about the real world in which they live. And what if I want to protect my skin and also tan? Is there a sunscreen that will protect my skin against the kind of exposure needed to bronze?
Well, the issue here is, and again, I think it's a major misconception, it goes back to the base tan, so to speak, is that a tan is somehow healthy and it protects your skin from getting a burn. And as long as I don't burn, then my skin is protected. And there's nothing could be further from the truth. The truth is that a tan is a way for the skin to defend itself. By definition, if you're getting tan, you are getting DNA damage and damage to your skin that can cause skin cancer. So there is no such thing as a safe tan. If you're looking to get tan, then you're looking to get sun damage and skin damage.
Dr. Skelsey, everybody agree with that? All docs, all dermatologists?
I absolutely agree with Dr. Tanzi. It's just a sign of sun damage when you get a tan on your skin.
You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno, sitting in for Diane today. If you want to join us in our final minutes, 1-800-433-8850. And to the calls now, Peter from Annapolis, Maryland joins us. Hi, Peter.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My mother passed away 2 years ago from a metastasized melanoma. It ended up getting up into her brain, and so she passed away from that. And I was just wondering, I'm a 53-year-old male, and I've been going for mole checks every year for about 10 years. But I'm just wondering, because she had a melanoma, what are my odds of getting it? Are my odds increased?
Dr. Skelsey, go ahead.
You have a greater chance. I'm sorry about your mother, but you do have a greater chance of developing a melanoma. And you should see a dermatologist for an annual skin exam. You should check yourself once a month and look over your own moles and look to see if you have any change in any of your existing moles, to see if you have any new moles. And absolutely be careful about sun protection.
Folks, we don't have much time left, but we should spend a couple of minutes, and I think the call pushes us in this direction, to talk about what progress has been made in treatment, where the big impediments still lie. Dr. Tanzi, you want to start us off with that?
Well, just speaking to the melanoma issue, because, again, that's the deadly type of skin cancer. And I, in fact, myself had a melanoma, a diagnosis on my leg 3 years ago. I think it's incredibly important, and I try to empower patients to realize that they can examine their own skin about once a month and looking for exactly those changes. A new mole, a changing mole, these are very important signs to bring up to your doctor. Although having a family history of melanoma will increase your risk slightly, most melanoma will come up on their own. So I wouldn't like people to think that they're protected because they don't have a family history. That's not the case.
Dr. Weinstock, briefly, because we only have about a minute left, where do you see the most progress in treating these kinds of cancers?
Well, we've had tremendous progress in understanding melanomas, and that has led to our understanding that for melanoma, there are different types, some more related to early exposure, some more related to chronic exposure throughout life or more recent exposure. And there's starting to be development of chemotherapy agents that can specifically address the specific type of melanoma you have. This is something that's evolving, but we've seen some very encouraging results. So we certainly hope that for those people where prevention didn't work, where early detection didn't work, that we will have these agents available to help treat them.
And Dr. Scalzi, last word to you. So a couple of, you know, three or four bullet points, words to the wise as we launch into what we want everyone to have here, which is a great summer, which is to protect yourself, keep an eye on yourself, and what else?
Look to see if you have anything that's changing. Look at your skin. Make sure that you don't have anything that's new, that a new spot that bleeds, that itches, and go to your dermatologist and check it out.
Doctors Weinstock, Scalzi, and Tanzi, thank you so much for your summertime briefing for us all, and I hope it's been helpful for all who've listened. You've been listening to The Diane Rehm Show. I'm Frank Sesno. Have a pleasant and safe day.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.